The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Andy Pollack, who I believe lives over in the Lake Creek area. Is that where you live right now, Andy? Just wanted to make...
Yeah, I'm out in Lake Creek over by Condi.
Okay, yeah. And of course, we knew you as a Second Amendment activist and, of course, really keeping us involved. Your daughter ended up passing away at the Marjorie Stoneman school shooting a number of years ago, and that's when you came to prominence, and you left Florida, and you came out here a number of years ago, and you're in the news again over the weekend. I didn't realize that this was something that that you were involved with, and thanks for the text message. Keep me in the loop on this one. And what happened with this picture, this portrait of Obama at the White House that was replaced with a painting of President Trump, you know, with his hand in the air after the assassination attempt that had been done to him? How did you get involved in this? What's the story?
It's pretty amazing, Bill. So when my daughter was murdered in 2018, my friend owned a gallery in Delray, Florida. It's called Blue Gallery. And I met an artist. To my surprise, he made a portrait of my daughter that's in my house right now, and it's pretty amazing. And I became very friendly with this artist, and he wanted to make a portrait of President Trump. And I had given President Don Jr. A gift, a commissioned a painting from about a year and a half ago, and it was in his living room, in Don Jr.'s living room. And the president went over for Thanksgiving, and he saw the painting that I commissioned, and it's of President Trump, and he was, like, amazed by it. And I knew he loved this artist, so after the Butler assassination, I commissioned another painting, and I've always been in touch with the president and his staff. He's truly, like, caring. You know, he sends me cards over the holidays, and he'll invite us to the White House occasionally, not since he got back in. I'll be invited soon. But we got this painting, and it took me a while. I tried to get it to him in Mar-a-Lago before he was president. It would have been a lot easier, but I've been constantly in touch, and we sent the painting. We had to go through Secret Service. I sent the painting, and then last week they sent the White House to me, and first they sent me the tweet that I put up in the White House. I was like, oh, I couldn't believe it. And then they called me to tell me if it was okay to use my name, that I had commissioned this painting and gave it as a gift. And it's significant because they met Obama. And Obama, I hold him partly responsible for the death of my daughter because he started the restorative justice program under his administration that spread into all the public schools. So it meant something to me that they removed his painting, put my painting there, and it's pretty amazing to see it. It took a few months, but we got it done, Bill.
Boy, well, I'm glad you did that, and boy, Andy, now local guy makes good on something like this. What I was kind of wondering about, though, you brought up the restorative justice, and this has been a sore spot with me, and when I do talk with school officials here in Southern Oregon or people on school boards, and I hear kind of the same thing, and people will say, well, we don't have restorative justice any longer. And I disagree with them because usually what they have done is renamed it somehow. You know, they end up calling it, emotional social learning or whatever the case might be. But essentially what ends up happening with restorative justice is that schools try to dumb down or don't have kids arrested who should be arrested, who maybe should be in mental institutions or who should be in jail, because it makes the school statistics look bad. Isn't that, in essence, what you've been fighting ever since your daughter died in that school shooting?
Bill, you hit it 100% correct. When my daughter was in her high school, after I did my investigation, because, you know, right away after the shooting, all the media just pushed for gun control.
Right.
And I didn't go down that path. I wanted to find out exactly what happened. So it was under the Obama administration. Arne Duncan was the Secretary of Education, and they came up with these policies. In my daughter's school, these restorative justice policies, kids were allowed three misdemeanors per school year every year, and then it would reset. You know, they'd start again at zero. So what it does is it puts administrators in charge of discipline and actual criminal activities, because it could work. You know, if they have law enforcement involved with some of these policies, I believe that it could work and put kids down the right path of success. But when liberal administrators, leftists, take control of this and think that, and they feel good about it, they're setting these kids up for failure. And it's true. They give them chance after chance, and it really doesn't help these kids at all. And it's in a lot of the public schools. Parents don't know about it. President Trump ended it. This is why the Department of Education ended, because we ended it with the Department of Education at a federal level, but it doesn't mean, you know, at a local level, they could still do it. They had no control over these policies.
And you have a situation like the murderer of your daughter, you know, back in 2018. Everybody knew Cruz was a bad kid and a real problem. Everybody knew it. If there was going to be anybody in a school that was going to go off the deep end and do something like what was done there, it was him. But yet nothing was done. Isn't that what happened back at that school?
Well, what happens is also with these restorative justice policies, like you say, the underreporting. So the sheriff, he'll in the county, they'll sign on to it because it'll show on paper that they actually reduced arrest in juveniles. So when they get to run for office, they could say, well, I reduced crime in juveniles by 50%, but in actuality, they're not arresting or reporting anything. So it looks good on paper, but it doesn't help the children. And yeah, the police, the sheriff's department were at the killer's house over 40 times, and he was never arrested. He punched his mother's teeth out. He trespassed at the school. He threatened to kill children, other kids at the school, raped them, never arrested. It got so bad, Bill, that I even uncovered they used to frisk him in the morning. That's how worried they were, but they still let him go to school. And us parents, we didn't know anything about it.
And any student that has to be frisked daily to get into school doesn't deserve to be in the school, because the other kids didn't have to do. They didn't have to do that with most of the kids, did they?
Well,
I hope not.
They give these kids more rights than the children that just want to go to school and you know, and have a good time and see their friends. These kids with the oppositional defiant disorder, they call it, they get more rights, you know, they get more rights than the kids that just want to go to school. And it's still in, you know, parents, you know, if you think every parent, like everywhere I go, Bill, because I work with school safety across the country, every community thinks it could never happen to them. You know, I go to Ashland. I went to Ashland High School, and I did some. I work with the NRA as a school shield program, where they go out and they do help with threat assessments, and they teach administrators what to look for. You know, Ashland High School is an open campus. You know, this is 2025. We know better by now. Every school in the country should have a single point of entry with fencing around it. So parents, you know. Parents have to wake up in a lot of these communities, and they really have the power to make a difference, you know, by just electing the right people into the school boards.
I hope you're right about that. I've noticed that the state of Oregon seems to be doing its best to strip whatever local power school boards have away. And have you noticed that by chance, you know, taking a look at what's been coming out of the state legislature?
Well, I really don't pay attention much in Oregon. You know, Oregon's a lost cause, you know, the people that run the state. I've mostly been working in, I go back and forth, you know, to Florida, Texas, Tennessee, states where you could really, like, I don't even think they're open to a conversation in a state like Oregon about school safety. They don't really put it at the top of the list as other states do. Mm-hmm. Like, if everyone followed the state of Florida, what we did after the shooting in Parkland, the schools would be a lot safer, including Texas. You know, Texas you had Uvalde recently. I'm saying recently, probably two years ago. They had a shoot in 2018. There was a shooting in Texas, in Santa Fe, Texas, on May 18th, and 10 children were killed. And Texas didn't make the necessary changes like Florida did. You got to learn, you know, states need to learn from other shootings and make the changes so we make our children safer. And a lot of states aren't doing that, Bill.
Andy, where could people, could parents find out more about the school safety issues that you're talking about? You have a main website people could check out, maybe some social media too?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Bill. We do, I have a company, it's called Xponse. It's X-S-E-O-N-S-E, Xponse.com. And we use a lot of AI now. We take the human error out of emergencies, Bill, because we know from other shootings, people fail when it comes time to report it. You know, they panic. So we took a lot of that out. So Xponse.com, mm-hmm. and they could reach out to me on my X at Andrew Pollock FL.
Okay, very good. Hey, I'm just kind of curious because you're talking about how Oregon is, you know, a lost cause in many ways in with these public schools, and yet a lot of kids are in here. I would agree, and this is why I'm kind of like 1 foot in and 1 foot out. There's a part of me that says if you want to save your kids now, you got to get them out of the public system. But yet for the long term, we have to reform the public. Is that kind of where you are too?
Well, I'm always here to help anybody that would ask, you know, regardless mm-hmm. of their political views. But I try and focus my energy on people that want it, you know.
You know, that would be, it's interesting then. Why are you here? Just curious. Why did you move here for that reason? I'm just curious, given, you know, what you're working.
My wife's family lives near Redding. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to live in California, so I moved a little north. And I got a nice piece of heaven out here. It's beautiful. And I go back and forth from Florida to Oregon. And Southern Oregon's gorgeous. You know, I like living here, but the politics are terrible. This last election, even in Jackson County, it went more blue. You know, Trump won the election, but not by much. And I think I could see this Jackson County turning blue within the next 5 years.
I hope you're wrong about that, but that has been one of my concerns, in which people just get to the point where, hey, I'm tired of the fight, and then I'm just going to cut, and I'm going to go move to Idaho, or I'm going to move to Florida, you know, all those sort of things. And that does leave the people that have some common sense that are left behind in a more difficult political position, right? It's just numbers,
well, to tell
right?
you, Bill, I worked with the local Republicans in Jackson County, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm willing to give up. I'm willing to fight, you know, if there's people in the game, because it is a fight, you know, it's a battle. It's like a liberalism is like a cancer that spreads. And it is spreading into Jackson County.
I appreciate the take on that. Josephine County, it's spreading a bit there, too. Not nearly to the same extent. They're definitely considerably redder than Jackson County at this point in time. Hey, Andy, I really appreciate that. I'm going to put your information up. And by the way, thanks for commissioning that painting. There's not a better painting that could have replaced Obama on that wall.
It's pretty amazing to think that it's a painting that I gifted is going to be in the White House, and it's going to be there for a long time, and it should, because that was an attempt of assassination on a president, and we got very lucky that President Trump escaped death that day.
Andy Pollock, we appreciate you being on. Thanks for reaching out, okay?
Thank you.
You take care. Good hearing from you. Andy Pollock, of course, over in Lake Creek. It's a little bit southeast of us. It's 731 KMED 99.3 KBXG.
Your smile is the key to your health and confidence. Do you?
Last 3 months or so of my shows available for free download and sharing on KMED.com or BillMeyerShow.com. Podcasts are sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They're helping keep you current. Find out about their services on ClouserDrilling.com. 734, we'll check news now in just a moment. And then I'm looking forward to talking with Julie Thomas and Jeremy Ford. The program is called Pathways to Stability. You may have heard it also referred to in Grants Pass. Of course, Grants Pass has been under attack under the homelessness agenda for a long time. And, of course, the courts have been putting all sorts of injunctions. And then we're just supposed to kind of, and then the people don't want to do this. And so Pathways to Stability is being discussed as a possible way of of making things work in Grants Pass. And I'm glad to talk about any or talk to anyone who may have something that works. Just like, well, last week we were talking about, you know, with Chad McComas. Chad McComas, formerly of Rogue Retreat, and he's there and getting that that program going for elderly homeless issues. All right. And I just, God bless him, you know, doing these things. And so we'll talk with Jeremy and Julie here in just a moment and find out what the story is here and what they're hoping to accomplish, all coming up.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on.
Hi, I'm Mark with Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, and I'm on KMED.
737. Proud to bring on Julie Thomas and Jeremy Ford, and Pathways to Stability is being talked about as a maybe a way out to something more sensible in the city of Grants Pass. City of Grants Pass, of course, has been ground zero for court attacks and injunctions and, hey, let's just turn over the parks to the homeless community, you know, that kind of thing. And people are looking for something different here. And first off, Julie, it's a pleasure having you on. Good morning, Julie Thomas. Welcome.
Good morning, sir. Thank you for having me.
Okay, what is your relationship in here with Pathways to Stability? What do you do there?
Huh? So I'm actually the president of PATH, which stands for Partners Assisting the Homeless. And a brief little history. A couple years ago, as you said, things were not working in the community as it comes across.
Yeah,
homelessness and addiction and mental illness.
That's right. Hey, Julie, if you could hold that just a moment, I just want to make sure people know that Jeremy Ford's here. Jeremy, are you here too, right?
I'm here.
Okay, good. All right.
Good morning.
Okay,
wonderful.
Good. I just want to make sure everybody's here before we move forward. And then if I try to talk to Jeremy, then I find out he's not there, you know. But anyway. So
this is why you get paid the big bucks. So a couple years ago, we got some concerned citizens that came to the table and said, wow, what we're doing is not working. We've got to be able to do something bigger, better, more sustainable than what we're doing. And that culminated to a very large multidisciplinary group of nonprofits and churches and local businesses and citizen volunteers. And we created a grassroots advocacy and working group committed to having a positive impact on homelessness, addiction, and mental health in our community. So our mission is to collaborate with our community partners to find sustainable solutions to help people transition from homelessness to a self-sufficient future in Josephine County. And that's been a huge job between the injunction and Measure 110 and the parks issues and the public spaces issues, and now, of course, that as well. But over this last 2 years, we've been able to really work closely together with many of our local nonprofits who are doing sustainable things to get people off the streets, out of our parks, out of their cars, back into work, back into housing. And it's been really an exciting evolution, but we knew we needed to do more. And so even though we're still doing what we do and we collaborate on a regular basis, we find out where the gaps are and we fill those gaps. The minute we heard about Jeremy and U-Turn and Pathways, we knew that this was where we needed to go as a community to drive this thing home, to reduce homelessness and make it rare, brief, and non-reoccurring, which is the end goal, right? Not just manage it, but eradicate it.
All right. Now, you know, when I hear the term collaborating and the nonprofit groups and everything like that, Jeremy and Julie, sometimes I get a little bit concerned that I'm hearing just an expansion of, and I'm sorry, and I don't mean to, I'm not tarring with a broad brush here, but kind of like the homeless industrial complex. Yeah, exactly. The homeless industrial complex racket, you know, of one form or another, in which it is the business model to keep as many people homeless. And then the state grant money is coming in, and I even get suspicious when I hear public-private partnership, you know, on these kind of things. So is that part of this model? Explain how it works, if you don't mind, Jeremy. I'll maybe go to you this time, okay?
Yeah. So me too. That word, homeless industrial complex, just it stands a hair on the back of my neck. And one thing I wanted to make sure when we first got going with this is that we didn't become any part of that. What we do at U-Turn for Christ is addiction recovery. And we, as a church body with Calvary Chapel of Grants Pass, we go out to the homeless encampments. And one night, just in the middle of the night, I'm pretty sure it was God that woke me up and said, you need to do something about it. And then as U-Turn for Christ, we've been in the recovery business for about 30 years now. And we've gone from one, just from one in Paris, California, now having, you know, 30 worldwide and across the country. And
so this is a model that has been replicated. I just want to be...
Yeah, it's been replicated. Right. And, you know, a lot of the people that come into the program are actually, they're homeless when they come to the program. And so one of the things we started looking at was kind of the Built for Zero model. But as we got to looking at it more, that's kind of a homeless kind of model. And we were seeing that that kind of wasn't really sustainable in the long run. There were people that were actually getting housed, but they're falling back out of homelessness because there wasn't treatment or any type of recovery services looked at. And so we kind of morphed it into the Pathways to Building model, looking to really tailor it for grants passed. We're looking at doing what's called a low barrier to entry model, where they actually, there's no barriers to come in, but within 14 to 30 days, we're going to ask you to choose a path out of homelessness.
Okay, so this then it would end up satisfying the injunction, essentially, in which there has to be a low barrier to entry, right? Am I right about that? Or one of the bones of contention that it made here is that, you know, you can have a shelter. But if you have rules that say, okay, you can't drink or drug, then you can't get in there. Or if you have dogs, you can't get in there, I guess. The problem is, though, aren't you, in essence, inviting the chaos into Pathways to Stability, I guess, in some ways?
Well, and so the thing is we're going to we've been going around the last couple of months. And like I said, we've been working with a lot of the other nonprofits. And we've been looking at different ways to kind of make this sustainable and make it work. And so we're looking to bring in case management, medical and mental health services evaluations. You know, even though we are faith-based, we're not going to mandate a faith-based, but we're going to allow faith-based to be a component
okay.
of it if they want.
Yeah, yeah. What is the difference between this and then what has already been tried in grants past? Maybe either of you.
I can jump in on that, Bill.
Okay, go ahead.
I have the history piece. So the things that have not been working is the enabling. The thing that's not working yeah. is the unaccountability. The thing that's not working is unmanaged sites, unmanaged places. So people get to do whatever they want. And it's human nature. They get to do whatever they want. They're going to do whatever they want. That's not sustainable. All it does is create more problems. The cool thing is that this fills the one remaining gap in our community. We have the MINT. So it's the lowest barrier shelter. Anybody can go in there at any time.
Right.
And there's no expectation that they get off drugs, et cetera, et cetera.
This is essentially you just walk in there and it doesn't matter what you're admitted. And there's at least a roof over your head so it's not raining and snowing on you. Okay? That's
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Now, they do have navigation. So they have nonprofits that are meeting with people there trying to get them out of that situation. So we didn't need another one. What we needed is something that was a low barrier entry so anybody could get in there. But once they're in there and they get stabilized, they have to be part of a program. They can't be doing drugs. They can't have alcohol. They have to abide by the rules. And they have to have skin in the game. And some people may be ready to get off and go into treatment, but they're not stabilized enough to get it, or they're waiting to go in. So what Jeremy is doing and Pathways is doing is providing the low barrier entry. The rest of the program is all accountability. They all need to be working for it, but also reduce some of the barriers. So they can bring a pet as long as it's not a danger to themselves or others. They are allowed to smoke in a designated smoking area, but it's 24/7 managed, 24/7 case managed. Everything that needs to be done can be done right there. So no longer are there barriers to going to treatment, barriers to go finding a job, barriers that give people excuses not to get better and to get healthier. So this is an accountability model, but Jeremy is right. It's different because it includes the treatment. It includes the mental health. I think those are two of the biggest things next to housing that our community are faced with right now.
One of the biggest challenges, I think, that we've had in our homelessness communities is that, you know, there are a certain percentage of people who just found themselves in a bad way, medical emergency, something like that happens, loss of job. And there are people like that that find themselves homeless. I don't think that's the majority of it, though. Isn't most of it an addiction issue and sometimes addiction and mental illness? With your experience, tell me what you see.
Well, I think they kind of go hand in hand with the addiction and the mental health part of it. And that's why we kind of looked at why we decided we want to help with this, because we've been doing this for so long on this end with U-Turn for Christ. And so we have one. excuse me. I'm still trying to get over a cold.
Sorry about that.
We have a we have 100% promoted from within U-Turn for Christ, which means that all the other U-Turn for Christ that we have are actually people that went through the program, got help, got sustainable, and put themselves in a position where they were now, you know, in full recovery and were able to go out and start another U-Turn for Christ. And so we know that's the thing, is that's what we realize, is that we need to have a treatment-first model here. We need to deal with the root issues that are going on with people inside. And drugs being the biggest part. And so we know if we can get them into case management, get them into recovery, and get people clean, that will, and then eventually transform them into workforce development, job placement. We're also going to be producing another part of the community that's able to go back out in the community and be part of the community and, you know, and working and developing the community and bringing the community up. Like Julie was saying earlier, one of the differences, this isn't going to be an encampment. This is going to be a managed 24/7 site.
So it's not like people go home at 5 o'clock and then leave everybody there until the next morning. Okay, that sounds
right,
good.
Exactly. No.
Yeah, we're going to have the city's going to provide security cameras. We'll have we'll have security on site. If the property does go through that we're desiring to go through,
and this is the Vine Street property that has been discussed, right? The Vine Street.
That's one of the properties that's been discussed. It's definitely our desire because of the size of the property to be able to bring all that. What we're looking to do is house all the nonprofits under one roof. Those that, like with ADAPT and Options and that do case management and medical health services, and have Cisco Health and Asante Health be able to be out there doing medical evaluations. So it's a one-stop shop that way. We don't have to send people across town or down to Medford, that we can case manage and house everything on one spot. And Vine Street property would be perfect for that because of its size and the scope and where its location is to the main roads and everything.
And what is the status or barrier of that being approved? Is this something Grants Pass City Council needs to get involved in or is involved with right now? I'm sorry to, you know, that could be a dumb question, but.
No, the city of Grants Pass and the city, I really want to tip my hat to the mayor and to the city council. They are really working very diligently behind the scenes to get something done as far as other resting spots and being able to put a stabilization center on our property. I know they're pushing really hard. We're hoping that by the end of this week that we'll have something more to share with the community. We're looking to hold a town hall meeting at the fairgrounds on March 21st between 2 and 4 p.m. to share more about the vision and what we're looking to do, because I think a lot of the community is not informed on what's really going on. And I think if we're able to inform the community of what's actually taking place, what steps we're actually implementing. And then we want to actually open this up to the community to actually come and help, because this is a big community problem. Hmm. And it's going to take all of us to solve this problem.
Yeah, that was so I'm just trying to imagine what this looks like. All right. What this actually looks like. I'm a drug addict. I've got some mental issues, let's say, and I've got my pit bull, and I got my portable tent and my backpack, right?
Right.
And then I decide that, hey, I can't live this way anymore. So what happens? I show up at Pathways to Stability, Grants Pass, and we got the U-Turn for Christ people. Yeah, I don't want to just stay at Mint any longer. Okay, God bless them, but you know, I need to do something about this. What happens when I'm kicked in, or when I'm inducted, so to speak?
So what we do is we're going to put them through an intake process. So we're looking at that to be about 72 hours. That way we can assess their needs, decide if it's treatment that they need, if it's medical or mental evaluations that they need. And then we're going to be placing modular units on the property, kind of like what they have down at Road Crossings with Road Retreat.
And so are they the tiny houses type things or something different from that?
Yeah, there's something similar to the tiny houses.
They're, all right.
They're 20-foot modular units, but they'll be duplex modular, so they'll have two in each unit. And then from there, then we'll just get them to what resources they need to get them find their pathway actually out of homelessness. Whether if it's addiction, we're going to allow them to get addiction treatment. If they're a vet, we're going to align them with VA services. If it's mental health needs, we'll align them with mental health needs.
And what if you're just someone who's just in trouble? And financially, you can't afford it, whether you're elderly or, let's say, a mother with kids. Are you mixing everybody up together, or is it kind of segregated, depending on the degree of issues?
Well, see, that's the first. Well, the first four populations that we really want to deal with is those with disabilities, mothers with children, veterans.
Okay.
And what was the other one?
Senior citizens.
Yeah. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have different areas. We're not going to lump everybody in one area. We'll have, you know, a different area for those with disabilities, seniors, women with children, and that and so forth. And so, and especially if you have a pet, we're looking at putting kenneling in, muzzles, harnesses, other things like that.
Yeah, you can't have the dogs chewing on anybody. That would be bad form, you know?
Yeah, that would be good.
We're, obviously, we're working with a few other people in the community. We're looking at the Greenfield RV park that's actually being built, being put in, and using that as more transitional and temporary housing. So what we've got is we kind of got a model all the way from low barrier to entry into case management, into transitional housing, workforce development, and being able to provide at the end of it permanent housing.
Okay, so a one-stop shop there, so to speak. What is the what is the criteria that says that you have flunked and we have to kick you out? Because you said, you know, first it's about getting somebody stable for a couple, you know, two, 3 days to get someone stable and then decide to get you into treatment. What is the criteria in which saying, hey, it's not working out, we got to kick you and your dog out, let's say? Hate to put it that way, but, you know, it's reality.
Yeah, you know, and unfortunately that is reality. We see that in the ministry here when we bring people into the recovery program. But I think one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to allow people to be recycled a few times. Because not everybody that comes to the program here gets it right the first time. And so we're going to have those that don't get it right the first time. We've actually got guys that actually run different ministries here that went through the program. One guy 14 times, and then he found the other 14 times he got it right, and now he's a pastor. He's running his own youth term for Christ.
Is there going to be a bit of a delay here so it's not someone's just continually kept on a 72-hour recycling bin, so to speak? You see what I'm getting at here?
But here's another thing that we also do. That if you're kind of not getting with it here in the program here, then we ask you to come back in 30 days. That way you can actually get serious, think about it, and get serious about it. And I'm sure we're going to have those type of situations and scenarios that develop with this.
Yeah, because you'd hate to have someone recycling every 3 days or being out for a day or so and maybe getting in the way of somebody who may be a better prospect who is more seriously committed, you know, to wanting to.
That's correct. Definitely. That's correct.
How many people are you planning on being able to handle if all goes well here?
Well, I think we're going to start off small. Like I said, we're going to focus on those four population groups, and then we're looking to, as this goes, we get some groundwork going, and we get some infrastructure in to be able to actually, our goal and our vision is that we can actually close down the encampments and that we can start housing everybody through the Pathway Stability Program at that property.
Okay, well, how much do you want to build it for? I mean, is it 2 dozen, 3 dozen, 50, you know, what kind of numbers are we talking about?
We're looking right now between 200 and 250.
200 and 250, wow.
Yeah, that's the significance about this, Bill, is that we don't have this this transitional housing opportunity. Those that we have are all full. And so if somebody is waiting to get into treatment, very likely they're going to go back to the park or the tent. Now they'll have stable housing, showers, laundry, case management, the help that they need, whether it's secular or faith-based. And so people are stabilizing. And when I mean, even just applying for a job, you got to have a hot shower and you got to prepare and you might need a little help. With
Yeah. And you need your, and you need your clothes, you need clean clothes. I mean, all the other stuff, right?
Exactly. So this is a huge gap. And then with the transitional housing to affordable low income housing, that would apply for those who would not normally because of their pay grade, or their circumstances, they'll never be able to afford $1,500 a month. So it comes with long-term low-income housing with case management, with supports that help them to become contributing members of our community, which is the end goal. You know, we don't want to manage it. We want to eradicate the problem and get everybody back to work and back to healthy.
Well, that's refreshing. What is the time frame to hopefully break ground on this? What are you shooting for?
I'll be within the next 30 to 45 days.
Okay.
We're looking at get this implemented. We've been doing a lot of things behind the scenes, like meeting with community partners. We put together a steering committee, a few leadership committees. And so we're ready to start running once the property does open up, which hopefully I'm thinking it might go through this week. Then we can start moving on it. We've already got we've had one of the developers for their Greenfield RV park is already decided that he was going to throw money towards purchasing 20 of the units that we could actually place on the property. So off top, we could probably get 40 people in, moving pretty quickly, and then we're just going to keep going and growing from there. I think one of the good things about what we've got going here is that we've got a beginning to the end model. And one of the biggest things that are keeping people in homelessness is lack of affordable housing. And us being able to pivot with the possibility of the Greenfield RV Park, which is going to have 118 housing units on it, you'd be able to use for sustainable housing. If we get that in play also, which it looks like it's going to be, we can bring them in all the way from Low Bear, get them in, and then get them into permanent housing also.
All right.
Huge.
Hey, Julie, when was this community meeting you were going to be putting on, you and Jeremy were going to put on? When's that going to be again?
It's going to be Monday, the 21st of April at the fairgrounds.
Oh, okay. So next Monday. All right.
Yep. And Jeremy's going to meet with Tamara to get the exact times, but we'll definitely get that information out to you. We'd love for the community to come out, ask really good questions. We're completely transparent. We're just holding up until we have a property, and then it's go.
All right.
We should pray for you. Just might get it.
And where's the money come from? Just curious.
Well, the money right now, it's going to be coming through private funding. One of the good things why we decided to get involved in this is we didn't want to be part of that homeless industrial complex. U-Turn for Christ has always been running on private funding. And we're looking to fund this also. That we don't want to be a burden to tax here. But there is also money that's all been allocated for shelter and housing programs, and we were looking at possibly tapping into that.
So that might take care of some of the hard cost of shelter, right? That kind of thing? All right.
Yeah. The thing we don't want to do is we don't want to see the taxpayer's water bill or electric bill go up because of what we're doing. And our goal at the end of this is to work ourselves out of a job. We don't want to be part of the homeless industrial complex. We have looked at a lot of different models across the country. We've seen that they've solved the homeless issue in a lot of different towns and communities. And so we're looking to do the same thing here.
Julie Thomas, Jeremy Ford, we appreciate you being on here this morning. Stay in touch. Keep us in the room here. And so let me know when that community meeting, when the time is scheduled over at Josephine County Fairgrounds, okay? I'll be interested.
You've got it.
All right.
Bill, thank you so much for your time.
And thank you very much, Julie. Thank you, Jeremy. Good talking with both of you, okay?
God bless.
All right. God bless. We need the blessings down here, that is for sure. Pathways to Stability, the plan for Grants Pass, Oregon. Shade Before 8, KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.
Just look at it.
Yeah, it looks great in the moonlight.
And talk about quiet operation. We're not waking up the neighbors.
So smooth and sleek. American Industrial Door knows their stuff.
Okay, it's my turn. Give me the remote.
Mom? Dad?
Yeah.
Are you going to stop playing with the new garage door soon?
Go back to bed, sweetie.
If your garage door is keeping you up at night, it should be for all the right reasons. Visit AmericanIndustrialDoor.net. Attention property owners and pro landscapers. Zoll's Lawn and Garden Equipment is stocked with the full Echo lineup. String trimmers, hedge trimmers, chainsaws, blowers, and mowers, all in either battery or gas options. And with Echo's rock-solid warranty, up to 5 years for homeowners and 2 years for commercial users, you've got power, performance, and reliability in your corner. Visit Zoll's Lawn and Garden Equipment, your full-service Echo dealer for the best selection in the region, serving Southern Oregon for 50 years.
At Pressure Point Roofing, we're dedicated to delivering top-quality, year-round roofing solutions while creating positive experiences for our customers. With our seasoned, year-round crews, now is a great time to book your roofing project. Have questions about roofing in the winter? Need financing options? Book a consultation today and see how our year-round roofing team can bring you peace of mind sooner. Why wait? Visit PressurePointRoofing.com and let us take care of your roof, no matter the season.
When concrete around your home sinks, it's never pretty, and it's usually not safe either. Terra Firma has the solution. We can inject safe, expanding foam through a hole smaller than a dime and lift existing concrete sidewalks, steps, patios, and more. Best of all, there's no mess, and you can walk or drive on the repair in just 15 minutes. So for a solution to sinking concrete at a fraction of the cost of replacing it, call Terra Firma for a safe, clean concrete repair.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided. Provided by Dish.
You're hearing the Bill Meyer Show on 106.3 KMED. Now Bill wants to hear from you. 541-770-5633.
A couple minutes after 8 o'clock, Brian's here. Brian, you wanted to comment on this Pathways to Stability in Grants Pass that we were just talking with the folks up there about. What are you thinking?
Yeah, well, I'm a member of Park Watch, and we meet every Sunday at 2 o'clock, and we clean up a park, and we switch parks every week. And there was 10 of us yesterday, and we met up with Jeremy a few days ago, and he planned, and he sent 15 guys in a couple of vans out to meet us, and we cleaned up in downtown Grants Pass. We cleaned up 5th Street, 6th Street. All the alleyways around the businesses from Rogue Roasters, it's a little restaurant there, all the way up past the railroad tracks. And you cleaned up all the alleyways and all around the businesses. And 15 guys, I'll tell you what, U-Turn for Christ has some very, very good guys with a lot of energy and a lot of they're all clean and sober guys, and it was a wonderful job to work with them yesterday.
When you hear then this plan to get something going that could possibly take 200 to 250 homeless off the streets in Grants Pass, what is your impression of that overall? It's difficult to envision it right now, but...
Yeah, I am 100% in favor of the Vine Street deal because it will get... the number one thing that I like about it is it's 24-hour managed. And U-Turn for Christ has several work crews. They strip blackberries in mm-hmm. people's yards. They did that to my neighbor's place. They paint houses. They have work crews. You get a job, you get clean and sober, and they'll provide for you. It's just a wonderful organization. And the fact that it's 24-hour managed, they're not going to be, like you said earlier, just left to do what they want in these camps. And then they just go out all night and rob and loot and steal and just create havoc.
Yeah, because it hasn't been working, right? That model hasn't been working. We know that.
It hasn't been working at all. They go right back to our parks. They leave a mess everywhere. And this is going to eliminate all that. And plus, it's up above. You know, the downtown area, it's up by I-5, and it will be well managed. I am completely for this solution.
Well, I hope you're right about that, Brian. Thank you for the call. 770-5633. I'll grab another one here before news. Dr. Powers joining me here in a few minutes, too. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome. Hello.
Hey, Bill. Deplorable Patrick here, Bill. I'm on with you.
Yep, you sure are.
Just want to ask you what your outlook is on getting Pam Bondi's attention over here, where our legislature is not just violating our constitutional rights, but they're ignoring the Constitution. And what's the outlook on the DOJ coming in here and saying, you guys, we're going to sue you?
I don't have a conclusion that I can draw on this quite yet. I think what would be helpful is to get Pam Bondi off of Fox News or so many media appearances. It's just my opinion. I seem to see her a lot on TV. And I know you have to worry about messaging. You know what I'm getting at? Messaging, yeah, of course, is important. But I'm concerned that for a focus on getting on television a lot, that there could be some attention being taken away from actually getting lawsuits rolling. I hope I'm wrong about that, and that this we're not worried about being on television as much as we are attacking the states that need attacked for their policies. And Oregon would certainly seem to be a ripe one for sure.
Hopefully she's got a good-sized staff there that can cover some of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing is, of course, she's very telegenic, and she's very good, you know, on the stump. Don't get me wrong about this, but
oh yeah,
I would like to see that that big legal brain buckling down along with her staff and maybe not worrying about making too many television appearances for a while. That's just me. Just me, though. Okay.
I was hoping we could do both.
Yeah. You like the look, don't you? Right?
I totally do.
Thanks, DP. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, John.
All right. It's 6 after 8.
Worried because your home has been on the market with no success. An expired listing can be frustrating, but it doesn't have to be the end of